Good morning. It's 8:37 now. It's F. Alex Morning Tuesday, and it's time for UR Medicine Finger Lakes Health. And we have Kimberly Ilacqua in the studio with us today. Good morning and welcome back.
Morning, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's always great to have you here. Before we meet our provider today, and I think a first-time guest, if I remember correctly,
yes. We
got a couple of things coming up, one of which is everybody's favorite, Doug's Fish Fry.
Yes, the Taylor Brown Auxiliary is hosting a fish fry this Friday at the Waterloo Five Star Bank. It's going to run from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. There's no pre-sales, so just show up and get a fish fry, and it helps support the residents at Huntington Living Center. Another thing that we have going on is this Thursday is our free community mobility screenings through our rehab department. Those are at Geneva General and at Soldiers and Sailors. And then next Thursday is our pre-dialysis education class. And then information on all of these can be found on our website at flhealth.org.
That's great that you do those pre-dialysis classes. I mean, that's got to be kind of a scary thing, and you really want to have some sort of idea on what you're getting into before it starts. So that's neat.
Yeah, the patients really appreciate it, just being able to learn more about what the dialysis could entail, learn more about kidney disease, and it's just very helpful. And it's for them and a caregiver.
And if people don't know about the mobility screening, those are done once a month. It's for senior citizens who might be at some risk of having falls. So if you've got some sort of inner ear or something going on, they can kind of put you through a little bit of a test to see what your fall risk might be, and maybe they can identify why it might be.
Yeah, they really focus on balance, safety, just making sure that people's gaits, things like that, to help them to be able to stay safely at home.
Also, from our community calendar at FingerLakesDailyNews.com, this Friday is a Red Cross blood drive. It's from 10 to 3. That'll be in Conference Room AB, the usual spot, a basement level of Geneva General Hospital at 196 North Street. And we have the Red Cross on once a month, and the last I knew, they were still having a pretty critical shortage, especially of certain types. So it's really important that people go to that drive.
Yeah, we really appreciate everyone that comes out to help support the blood drive.
All right, let's meet our provider.
Well, as we know, March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, so I'm very excited to have the pleasure to introduce Dr. Christopher Walker. Dr. Walker joined us last August. He is with Finger Lakes Gastroenterology, and he is board certified by the American Board of Internal Medicine, and he completed his fellowship in gastroenterology and hepatology, as well as his residency in internal medicine at the University of Rochester. And he did his medical school at Eastern Virginia Medical School in Norfolk, Virginia. So now it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Walker.
All right, let me, before we talk to Dr. Walker, make sure I have my facilities right. Gastroenterology, that's in the new location right up here on 5 and 20?
Yep, right down the road.
Yeah, right up by Geneva Harley-Davidson. Yep. All right, got it right. I know my facilities. Dr. Walker, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
I don't know if you were warned about the first-time guest biographical grilling. So we want to know all about you. Kim told us a little bit, so just tell us about yourself and your path to a medical career.
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. I was born and raised in Spring Valley, New York, downstate, in the Hudson Valley region, and eventually went to college at Binghamton University. Before going off to medical school, I did work a few years in a hospital in New Jersey, and then went to medical school in Virginia. And then, as you heard, did residency and fellowship in Rochester. So that's kind of the path that I took. I first realized that I was interested in medicine in general, the healthcare, when I realized people around me were getting sick. You know, people at my church, people in my home, in my family, and I wanted to do something for them, but recognized that I couldn't, apart from just be there. And while that was important in that stage of my life, I realized that I wanted to be able to give more. So I kind of over time just learned more and took the path, and you know, here I am today. And you know, thankfully, the knowledge that I've acquired over time, I'm able to share with my family, and I kind of see the changes that happen in their lives, which is good. And I'm certainly happy for it. So
March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Tell us a little bit about what the colon does and how it can become cancerous.
So the colon is also referred to as the large intestine. It's a part of our digestive tract, and it's one of its main jobs is to absorb water. There are a number of other functions that it has in terms of the different things that it absorbs, but one of the main things is absorbing water. And when polyps develop in the colon, over time, those polyps can become cancer. So a polyp is basically just a bump on the inside of the colon that like I said, over time can become cancer.
Can the polyps be detected with that fecal test where you take the sample and send it in?
Not really.
Okay.
That fecal test doesn't do a great job of detecting polyps. Those tests. There are two of them. There's one that detects blood and one that detects blood and cancerous DNA. So both of those tests are fairly good at detecting cancer, but they're not great at detecting polyps, which are precancerous. Polyps appear before cancer.
So the recommendations have changed recently for colonoscopy. It's down to age 45 now, correct?
Correct. If you look at the data, the people who were born around the year 1990 or after are twice as likely to develop colorectal cancer in their lifetime than people who were born in the year 1950. We're seeing a rise in colorectal cancer among young individuals. And when I say young, I mean less than 50. And we don't have an exact reason for that, but we do believe that sedentary lifestyle, dietary factors, we feel that these things are contributing, but we don't know for sure. There's nothing that we have that's concrete evidence for that.
Does colorectal cancer still tilt more toward men?
Yes, it does. One in 23 men will develop colorectal cancer in their lifetime, versus 1 in 25 women developing colorectal cancer in their lifetime. So it does tilt towards men. It does tilt towards men. Yeah.
Is there any genetic component, and should you test earlier? For example, breast cancer, we know that mammographies, I think they say now, are 40. But if there's history, for example, your mother had it, you should get it earlier. Is there any such genetic link with colorectal cancer?
Yes, absolutely. Knowing the family history, I guess first I'll say knowing the family history is important for sure. The details of the family history are hard for everybody to keep track of. So basically just knowing what it is, knowing your family history, and when I say knowing your family history, I mean knowing what cancer your family member had, how old your family was when family member was when they were diagnosed with that cancer. Those two pieces of information are important. So with colorectal cancer, knowing, you know, if it was mom or dad or brother or sister, basically a first degree relative being diagnosed with colorectal cancer before the age of 60, that would be important to know, because it definitely does change the timeline for colorectal cancer screening in those individuals.
So you mentioned that cancer often begins with these growths called polyps. So what are those, and how do they develop, and how do they become cancerous?
So polyps are basically little bumps in the colon. They can develop for any number of reasons, all of which we don't know. But we do know that certain things can increase the risk of them growing and becoming cancer over time. So things like family history, like we mentioned, but there are other things like smoking, diabetes, sedentary lifestyle, even dietary factors like eating red meat, processed meats, those increase your risk of developing polyps and cancer.
As far as dietary things go, is that where we're eating more fiber and roughage helps you?
That's right. Eating more high fiber foods, so your fruits and your vegetables, you know, oatmeal, things that are high in fiber, that's associated with a lower risk of developing polyps. And there isn't any one diet that will completely obliterate the risk of developing cancer. The risk, we've found that the risk is lower on the high fiber diets.
How do we treat colon cancer? Is it removing the cells or in some cases removing a part of the colon?
So once colon cancer has developed, it depends on how much cancer we're dealing with. So is the cancer limited to the inside of the colon? Is it starting to spread through the wall of the colon? Has it started to spread to the lymph nodes and the liver throughout the body, et cetera? Knowing where the cancer is kind of guides the treatment. And the treatment options are basically surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation.
One of the ways you get these messages to men is to go where they go. You like to go to barbershops and spread the word. Tell us about how that started.
Yeah, a friend of mine, a friend and coworker of mine, started it as a project of her own and told me about it. And immediately I was interested. And arranged to go to these different barbershops in the area and basically just have a conversation with the people who were there. You know, we might let the barbers know that we're coming, but not necessarily try to get a huge crowd or anything. Just whoever happens to be at the barbershop that day, just have a conversation with them, young, old, everybody, and basically just share the word. And once the information is out there, then, you know, everyone can start sharing it with each other. And I think that's helpful. One of the big parts of what we have been doing is educating the barbers themselves, so that when they're working with their clients and I'm not there, they can still have the conversation.
Wow.
With all the facts that they need to have. And, you know, if they might have pamphlets or something that we might have given them, and, you know, they're able to kind of debunk any myths that might have existed on their own, just by us having kind of an education session beforehand. And then, you know, they're just at work another day, another conversation. So it's been pretty helpful, it seems.
I know a lot of men, they hear colonoscopy, they go, swallow that stuff and everything else that goes with us. So take us through what the process involves in this day and age.
Yeah, so I will admit, you know, the hardest part is the prep. And when I say the prep, it's the clean out, the things that you have to take in order to clean your colon so that it's clean enough so that we can see things, so that
right.
We can see if there's a polyp. So I will admit that that's the hardest part. Now with all of the changes in prep quality, it actually there's a prep that's right for you, basically. There are pills, there are small volumes of liquid, there are some that don't taste great. So obviously for people who don't like the taste, they don't take that one. And then there are others that taste quite a bit better.
I didn't realize that there were those options. I've just learned something.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we used to think of, you know, this huge gallon jug,
right.
It's just salty liquid and it's like, oh, nobody wants to drink that. But there are way more options now. You know, if you express whatever concerns you have about the prep to your physician, he or she will help guide you to the prep that might be best for you. The other thing to recognize, is that there are safety issues with some of the preps. So, you know, even though you might prefer one for you as a patient might prefer one for one particular reason, there may be a medical condition that
okay.
might limit your options. So, you know, don't be surprised if your physician hears you but is leaning more towards a different direction because of whatever pre-existing conditions you may
have. If someone hasn't gone through a screening, what are some signs that they might need to go to talk to their doctor that they might be having polyps or colon cancer?
So before the sign that you have a polyp or cancer, the sign that you should go to your doctor is your 45th birthday.
Right. yep. Well done.
But, if someone, develops polyps, they actually might not have many symptoms. One of the issues with symptoms for colon polyps and colon cancer is that it's not uncommon to not have symptoms. Many people may not have any symptoms at all. But there are people that have issues with rectal bleeding, abdominal discomfort, whether it be in the form of bloating or pain, constipation or diarrhea, and things like this. But these symptoms are somewhat vague, can exist in other scenarios. And like I said, they don't have to exist in people who have colon cancer. So I don't recommend waiting until there are symptoms, because at that point it could be too late. I do recommend getting checked when you're healthy. Like I said, the biggest thing to remember is that you could be asymptomatic while having an issue. So,
as you said earlier, there's no perfect diet, but in general, what dietary changes should we make to be as colon healthy as we can?
It would be best to consume a high fiber diet. So that'll be 25 grams of fiber per day for most people. Some people may need 30, some people may need 20, but most people would benefit from 25 grams of fiber per day. And when you're having that much fiber, you should make sure that you're drinking enough water, because if you don't drink enough water, then the fiber will bind you up. And most people would benefit from half an ounce of water for every pound of body weight they are. So you take your body weight, divide it by two, and that's how much water you should drink. So if I weigh 200 pounds, I should drink 100 ounces of water a day, with 25 grams of fiber per day. And that's generally speaking.
Right.
Obviously, once you get to certain extremes, you have to adjust those calculations quite a bit. But on average, that's what the high fiber diet would look like. And then avoiding processed meats and red meats would be advised as well. So avoiding deli meat, bacon, hot dogs, all the fun stuff.
Yeah,
everything in moderation. But avoiding those things, just sticking to more leaner meats, chicken, fish, would be a better route.
All right, Dr. Walker, thanks for the great information and for the best answer to a question we've ever had on this program, which is, what symptoms? Being 45. Remember that, guys. 45, just go. Thanks so much for the time and the information. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Kimberly, thank you as always. Good to see you.
Nice to see you too, Ted.
All right, we love to do it. Twice a month, we get healthy with UR Medicine, Finger Lakes Health. It's now 8:54.